about right, because I've run out of things to say, and our guests are here, and I'll give this mic to Wayne and let him introduce our very special guests. We're so proud to have you here today, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It is indeed an honor to have this gentleman with us here today. I don't think you can think about Florida agriculture and not think about this person. He's probably done more in modern times for Florida agriculture than anyone else in the state of Florida. And he's a native Floridian and not too far from here where he was raised, and we're certainly proud to have him. Please make welcome Mr. Doyle Connor.
Thank you very much.
We wanted to start off and get a little sort of a background on some of your life, and I know you were raised not too far from here, weren't you?
Stark, Bradford County.
Right. And then you went on to the University of Florida after that.
I'm a Gator.
Yeah, full-fledged Gator. And we had a gentleman from Alpha, where I was raised, and Don Fuquay, who later became our congressman. And I understand that you were roommates with him, is that right?
Yeah, I was with Don and John Willis and Polly, who were visiting with a group from Vero Beach. I was with them last weekend over at St. Augustine at a fraternity reunion. I'm very fond of Don. Don is a very distinguished American. And if I have time, I'll tell you a little story about Don. When I was about 14 years old and he was about 12 years old, and we were at a 4-H camp on the campus of the University of Florida. And we were talking politics, and I'll tell you about that.
Okay. Well, speaking of politics, of course, that was a big part of your life, was your career in politics. And you started early. And I understand that you actually were running for office while you were still a student at the University of Florida.
I ran for the legislature twice while I was a student at the University of Florida. And after that, I didn't have any opposition. When I got out of school and could afford the time, then I ran unopposed. But boy, when I was a student, it was rough.
Well, do you think your age was a factor in that? That people just thought that a young
kid running. I was running against the incumbent, and he felt like it was his office. And it was.
Well, how do you guess you managed to beat him?
I worked hard. He didn't work as hard as I did. I almost flunked out of college. I think my mother thought I was going to flunk out of college, and I was home campaigning all the time. And then I ran against him, and then he came back and ran against me. And after that, everything was pretty peaceful. By then, I was out of school.
Well, how old were you when you took office for the first time?
21.
21 years old and in the Florida legislature. So what were some of the things that you were concerned with back at that time? What years are we talking about?
Well, that was 1950. That was a long time ago. To me, it seems like just yesterday, but things have changed. Things in government, things in agriculture, education, everything has changed drastically in the last 50 years. You know, Florida was a small rural state at one time. You'd never believe that now.
Yeah.
You would think everybody has come to Florida. The traffic in Tallahassee, the traffic all over the state is enormous. And that's going to continue because, you know, we talk about this great world of agriculture we have here in Florida. One of the reasons for that is that we have such a mild climate. You can grow most anything in volume, but it brings a lot of tourists to this state. And I have no idea. I'm in the cattle business, and I have no idea where we're going to put a cow 50 years from now, if it changes as much in the next 50 years as it has in the last 50 years. But Florida is a great state. It has a diversity that keeps it from being boring. It brings a lot of good people to Florida. All of them don't stay. A lot of them come and go back. But many, many people visit Florida on their vacation or for the winter. Many people come and live in this state during the winter months. We're glad to have them, and we hope they're glad to be here.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they are. Well, you were Commissioner of Agriculture for 30 years after you served two terms in the legislature.
I served five terms.
Five terms in the legislature.
I served all during the 50s, and those were two-year terms. In those days, we met every other year. Later on, the Constitution was changed, and then we started meeting annually. But during the 50s, we met every other year. And I think that was enough. I think the people of Florida probably thought it was enough. Now, they meet every year in special sessions. But Florida is a growing state, and there are a lot of problems. And I never will forget. I was a young country boy sitting there in the legislature, and we were dealing with the budget bill. And I remember the appropriations that year was $500 million. Now, I thought that was a lot of zeros, and I thought that was a lot of money. That wouldn't run the state government for 30 minutes now. Florida's a big state. We have a vast budget. Education is very expensive. Highways, public health, all of those things are very expensive items, and they have just drastically increased in the past years. And that's not going to change. We're the third largest state in the nation, and those demands are going to be around, particularly in education. It wouldn't be wasted, but you could spend all the money there is on education. It's a good cause, has a lot of appeal, it's a necessary thing, but when you stop and think about what an adequate education program costs, I remember the minimum foundation program, which was a thing when I came along, that was just requiring teachers to have minimum qualifications, minimum salaries for teachers, and all that was squeezed into that $500 million budget. And now that amount of money wouldn't run the schools a full day.
Some counties probably have a budget of that much.
Oh, far more than that.
Well, what was it that made you want to run for the office of Commissioner of Agriculture?
Well, I was always interested in politics. When I was about 14 years old, 15, I was at Camp Olina at an FFA summer short course meeting. And Mr. Nathan Mayo came there to speak to those young men. And I remember going up to him at that time, and I said to him, "Mr. Mayo, you've made a great Commissioner of Agriculture, and I hope you stay there forever. But if you ever decide to retire, I want to succeed you."
And how old were you at this time?
I was about 14. And I was serious about it because that's where my interests were. I was interested in politics, but I was interested in and agriculture, and I figured the two could go together, and about the only place that they could would be Commissioner of Agriculture. So stop to think about it. Between 14 and about 19 or 20, when I started running for the legislature, that wasn't very many years, and you got to do some things to lay the groundwork. So I went on in the FFA and was fortunate enough to be elected national president. And I remember Senator Holland and Senator Pepper had a luncheon for me in Washington, and they began to inquire about what my plans were. And I said, well, you know, I'm 19 years old. I really don't know what I'm going to do, because I got to get out of, I was a senior in high school. I've got to get out of high school first. But I kind of think I'd like to run for the legislature. So that fall, I started running. I started running before I was old enough to vote. And you have to be a registered voter in order to qualify for public office. Well, I was going all over Bradford County campaigning, not telling anybody that I wasn't a registered voter, because the polls didn't open until the first day for qualifying was the last day to qualify for office. So I had from 8 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock at noon to get all the logistics in order, or I could have never run. But nobody thought anything about it. They thought I was fully qualified legally to be running. And as it worked out, I didn't get a bad cold and didn't go to the hospital. I made it to the clerk's office and got qualified. So then and many years thereafter, I qualified many, many times, either for the legislature or for Commissioner of Agriculture. And I never was real ambitious politically. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I hope I was doing successfully. And that's where I spent my time. There's nothing more rewarding than to go around campaigning and listen to people tell you how it is. A lot of people have opinions, and a lot of people like to express those opinions, and they're entitled to do that. And I think you can learn more listening to other people and knowing. You know, I wish everybody had to run for some office at some time, particularly those who think they're 100% right on everything. I didn't get all the votes. I didn't know anybody else running for public office that got all the votes. And if you wake up and the votes are counted and you don't have all of the votes, a rational person will realize, well, maybe there's some reason why somebody disagrees with me. And I think at an early age, I learned that they were entitled to that, that they could disagree with me in an agreeable, I wanted it to be agreeable, but they could disagree with me on something. And I managed to live through those many years of taking votes on practically everything we give. I lived through many years of debate where there was another view. And I never thought that I was clearly, definitely, unquestionably correct on everything. I expressed my views. The other office holders expressed their views. The votes were taken. And that's what counted. And I learned when I was 21 years old to live with that decision. a majority decision. Can the majority be wrong? Sometimes they are, but seldom are they really wrong. And I learned those basic lessons very young. And I think it served me well through the years because I could engage in debate and respect my opponent just as much when it was over as I did when we started. And to put your personal feelings in those debates, I think it's a very serious mistake.
Well, do you think that maybe is part of the problem that we see with some of the deadlock we see in the legislature today, that people are just unwilling to hear another viewpoint?
Yes, indeed. I often think, and I had to make that decision one time if I wanted to serve in Congress, and I pretty well made up my mind that I cannot be that partisan. You know, I'm a Democrat, but there's plenty of room for a lot of Republicans. And to have a party leader call you in and say, this is the way we're voting, I would have to say, excuse me, let me go back to Florida. I have a district where people tell me how to vote, and they may be Republican and they may be Democratic. I can't live with the party line. Parties are good, they help get out votes and all of that, but to discipline a congressman for not voting because this was the party line, I couldn't live with that very well. I would want to go home and say, I voted for what I thought was best for this district. Now, you know, the election is over with at a given time. And when you continue to live by those party rules, then you're really not representing your constituency, in my opinion. So I was happy to stay here in Florida and take care of my little business, and the people were good to me. I never worried about the outcome of an election. I had a lot of opponents from time to time. I didn't, you know, my first election for the legislature and the second one was a tough one. And after that, they were not all that bad. And then the 30 years I served as Commissioner of Agriculture, I always felt very confident. But I worked hard, and I tried to take care of people's needs to the best of my ability. We had about 4,500 employees. I never asked an applicant for a job whether they were a Democrat or a Republican. We just tried to hire good people and let it go at that. And I think we did. I think we had people that were well qualified and very conscientious, and they never let me get in any trouble. And one of the things I tried to teach them, if you find out you're wrong about something, don't continue in that mode. Correct it as quickly as you can. Admit that we've discovered a better way. That the fact that you were doing it that later proved to be an incorrect way to do something doesn't mean that the circumstances that brought all that together doesn't mean that they were ill-conceived. It's just that there's a better way to do it now, and the quicker you can get to doing it a better way, the better it is. And that philosophy survived and held up well for a long, long time.
We've only got about 5 minutes left, and there's a ton of questions I'd love to try to...
Okay, I'll be quiet and let you ask questions.
To get into that 5 minutes, so we'll just take a few and a few points that I wanted to touch on. One was, one thing that was very important in Florida agriculture was the eradication of screwworms. And what was your role in that, and how did that come about?
I introduced the bill in the Florida House appropriating $25,000 to carry out a demonstration. We had received a report there that USDA had conducted a test in the Caribbean, and they found that by the use of cobalt 60, they could sterilize the screw fly, and through the process of elimination could annihilate the population. And we took that $25,000 and put a few things together. And while we were putting it together, we had the worst freeze we had had in many, many years. And that killed the flies back to a zone in the peninsular state. And all we had to do was to spread some sterile flies there to hold them below that zone. And we had enough money to put out enough flies to keep them down in the peninsula. And you know the story. We eradicated screwworms from the state of Florida, and they only passed that line, I think, two or three times. They were immediately wiped out by dropping sterile flies in the area. So up until that point, and maybe to this day, I thought it was the most phenomenal agricultural advancement in the history of the world. It was just unheard of that something like that could be accomplished. They started saying, well, try it on mosquitoes, try it on lovebirds. They wanted to try that technique on every pest in existence. It has worked. I had an invitation from the president of Mexico asking me to come there to celebrate their eradication of the screwworm. So it's down through Mexico and down into Guatemala, and it's a great thing. And when I was a kid, that's all I did was ride my horse in the woods with my brother and my father, two brothers and father, doctoring screwworms.
So that's a good example of a program that started here in Florida that benefited worldwide, because that was a problem all over the more tropical regions around the world. And we thank you, I tell you, because not only for Florida agriculture, but for the wildlife aspects of that, because if you're too young to know about screwworms, that was a fly that came in here on some cattle from, was it Texas that came in?
The cattle were shipped in after the drought out there, and they brought the screwworms with them.
And so any kind of a wound on an animal, anywhere there was blood, these flies would lay their eggs, and the maggots would not just eat dead material, they would eat live tissue, and they would eventually kill the animal. And so any time a deer was born, that navel was exposed. Any time a calf or a hog or anything, you had to really watch, and that was a big, big problem. And if you didn't accomplish anything else in your political career, you did the world a favor with that one.
Well, when I was a child growing up, I never saw a deer in the woods. We eradicated the screwworm, and I was in the legislature at the time. We imported some deer into Bradford County. And today, you drive along the highways and you see deer everywhere. So it benefited wildlife as much as it did livestock.
One other thing that before we go that I'd like to touch on, and you touched on it briefly a while ago, and that is with all the development that we're seeing in Florida and with the expense of property in our real estate, there's no way that a young person can go out here and say, I'm going to become a farmer, I'm going to go borrow the money and buy land and buy a $250,000 combine, and I know a farmer at home that farms about 3,000 acres, his fertilizer bill is over $1 million a year. And so there's no way a young person can go out here and get into that business and be profitable without inheriting land or some way of doing it. with the development pressures that we see in Florida, what do you see as the future of Florida agriculture, and how is that going to bear pressure on Florida agriculture? And we think that gasoline is a problem now and that oil is a problem, but when people start going to the grocery store and they can't find things on the shelf that they're accustomed to, they may find out that there's some things more important than oil. But if you could just briefly touch on that.
Well, this problem is not going away. The same mild climate that is conducive to all this agricultural production is conducive to people moving here to get away from the cold north. And there is a conflict there. They've got to have a place to live, and they're moving in on some of our desirable agricultural land. Education, intensification, will solve some of the pressure. New varieties, better fertilization, disease control will increase our production. But that's going to be some challenge to make up for the pressure that's on agriculture. So I don't know the answer, but there will be a way. We will survive. The University of Florida does a great job in research, in getting more out of what we have. That will continue. But there's no denying, if the sun shines on the beach, there are a lot of people who want to come, and they're going to keep coming. And we just hope that we can keep up with the demand for food so that the prices can stay stable, so that the supply can be adequate. And there's a lot of undeveloped land still in Florida, but not as much, really, as you might think.
Well, Mr. Connor, it certainly has been a pleasure. I wish we had another hour and a half to sit here and talk, but you're certainly probably the most respected man in Florida agriculture, and I don't know of any politician that's more respected than you have been through your career. You've never lost an election, and that speaks pretty highly of you. So thank you for coming.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.